Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I walk a straight line, shackle and chain. Oh, gruesome Gertie is calling my name. There is no mercy in this penitentiary. Just ask the Hill String Gang, Rango the Three.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back to Bloody Angola,
a podcast 142 years in the making,
the complete story of America's bloodiest prison.
And I'm Jim Chapman.
And I'm Woody Overton.
And we got some executions to talk about today, Woody Overton. Right.
This is so interesting.
Yeah. You know, last week we talked about people getting exonerated off of death row, and that's been a big hit.
And we also talked about some of them deserve to be on death row.
Yes.
And get not to breathe anymore.
Right.
Again, so the state actually, it's state sanctioned homicide, the executions. And I think I told you this before on their death certificate, when it's caused death, it says homicide.
All right. And the first person we want to tell you about, and these are not necessarily in any particular order, y'all, is a guy by the name of Leslie Dale Martin. And yeah. Leslie Dale Martin was executed by lethal injection in Louisiana in May of 2002.
Yep.
So before we get into kind of his crime, I'm gonna tell you some interesting little side notes on him. His final meal was boiled crawfish, crawfish stew, garden salad with Italian dressing, oatmeal cookies, and whole milk with chocolate syrup.
That's crazy. I always like to hear what they choose for that, right?
Yeah, and his final words, he actually declined a final statement. So he did not have any final words.
Nothing to say.
Horrible guy. Let me tell you about him. On June 20th of 1991, Martin and Michael Rowland went to the 12th Street Lounge in Lake Charles about 11 p.m. After playing pool and drinking beer for about 2 hours, the victim, who was a college student and part-time employee at a pizza outlet, also went to the lounge between 11 p.m. and midnight with some of her friends.
Right.
Martin and the victim met through Roland, who had known the victim previously. Now, during the evening, the victim danced with Martin while each shared drinks and companionships with other friends at the lounge. And about 1:30 a.m. the next morning, after Roland and most of the victim's friends had left the lounge, the victim asked Martin for a ride home, and Martin agreed. No one ever saw the victim alive again. About 7:30 a.m., Martin visited Leo Gumbelit, his carpentry supervisor on a recent job, and stated he had met a blind college student the night before and left the lounge with her and woke up on Galveston Beach, not knowing where he was. Martin's clothes were dirty, and he pointed to vomit in his ashtray, stating, "I guess that bitch threw up in my truck." When Martin returned to his aunt's home, where he was residing at the time, he was wearing different pants than he wore at the time he left the previous evening. He had no shirt or shoes. He washed his clothes and his truck seat cover, telling his aunt they got muddy when he engaged in mudslinging with Roland. Martin also had scratches on his chest and back, a bite mark on his shoulder, a tear under his tongue. He told his cousin he had fought with a country boy in the lounge.
Yeah, he fought all right.
The same morning, Martin told Huey Rushing that he thought he may have killed someone the previous evening and asked Rushing to provide him with an alibi, saying he had spent the night at Rushing's home. Rushing refused, and Martin told him that on the way back to Lake Charles, the woman threatened to report him for rape. Martin talked about a shed in Iowa, a town in Calcasieu Parish, and related that he had put a rope around the girl's neck, choked her, cut her throat, dug her eyes out,
right,
and jumped up and down on a wooden board placed across her neck. In response to a question, Martin asserted that he did not want to be turned in for rape again. In 1984, y'all, Martin had raped his own 14-year-old sister at knife point.
You don't want to go back to prison.
While their mother was in the hospital. He was sentenced to 10 years for sexual battery, but served only 5. Rushing related Martin's story to his girlfriend, but they deemed it unreal until Rushing heard 9 days later that a girl was missing after leaving the 12th Street Lounge. Rushing reported the story to police, who found the victim's decomposing body in a search of sheds in the Iowa area. The police found a rope around her neck and a wooden board nearby, which contained human blood. The police obtained a warrant and arrested the victim. So that is why this guy ended up on death row.
Right. I mean, he cut out the eyes actually after she was dead. But he told somebody later on he did that. Just he said she could never identify me. She didn't have her eyes. Wow. And jumped up and down on her neck with a board. Almost decapitated her. Yeah.
Disgusting.
And like I said, some people don't deserve to be. And his whole deal was he didn't want to go back to – he actually ended up raping her is what I believe, but he didn't want to go back to prison.
In 2002, the Baton Rouge Advocate reported on that execution, and it said condemned killer Leslie Dale Martin went to his death Friday night for the rape and murder of 19-year-old McNeese State University co-ed. Before facing the executioner's needles, Martin offered no public apology for the slaying.
Imagine that.
Louisiana State Penitentiary Warden Burl Kane said he was pronounced dead at 8:16 p.m. He was 35. And we're not going to get into, you know, all the crimes I just told you about. But, Woody, to me, it's a situation where, you know, where this guy had absolutely no remorse for what he did, which was evident in the fact that he didn't say anything. But, you know, even when he was on death row, people ask about people escaping from prison. In November of 1999, Martin and three other condemned inmates rocked Angola when they escaped from their cells in the building that houses Louisiana's death row. After officers found them missing, the chase team got involved. And a bloodhound tracked them to a swampy area of the prison grounds near the Mississippi River. Now, Kane blamed the security lapse on a guard who accepted a bribe to smuggle hacksaw blades to the inmates and inattention by other officers who should have noticed the men cutting their cell doors and a window during a 2 or 3 week period.
Yeah, I mean, death row, you got one job.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's a correctional officer.
No one was prosecuted because of that incident. However, now in January of 2000, two guards reported hearing Martin and another inmate discussing another possible escape attempt, including the taking of hostages, Kane had reported. Right. He immediately ordered Martin's transfer to the death chamber holding cell at Camp F, which is several miles from the death row building at the prison's front gate.
In the back.
This guy was not a good guy.
Right. Death row by is at by the front gate. The death house is way, way back in the middle of 18,000 acres. Mm-hmm. In hell or jail, right? He's a horrible, horrible, was a horrible human being. So I'm going to take you to the next one, y'all. And this guy, can't tell you how many hours I spent talking to him. I can see his face right now. He was housed in a cell right by the booking room in Livingston Parish, and they had a little trap door open. He was just nice as could be, spoke very well and everything, but he was truly a monster. And his name was Gerald Bordelon. And he was down for murder and rape of his stepdaughter, Courtney LeBlanc, okay? And he murdered her on November 15th of 2002. And technically, I mean, they have it listed as East Baton Rouge Parish, but it wasn't. Her body was found on the East Baton Rouge Parish side of the Amy River. And she was naked except for a pair of shorts and one shoe. But he ended up confessing that he killed her in the LP. Earlier life, Bordelon was sentenced to 10 years in prison after pleading guilty in 1982 to sexual battery, and he was sentenced to 20 years in prison for his 1990 conviction for forcible rape and two counts of aggravated crime against nature. But what often happens, he got out on parole. And while on parole, he met Jennifer Cock over the internet and married her a year later. They lived in Mississippi, and the Mississippi child welfare people came and told Cock, hey, he's a convicted sex offender, and instead of doing anything to the positive as a mom, she moved into Livingston Parish. But I'm going to kind of skip around a little bit, but I'll tell you the story. They married, but they separated after 12-year-old Courtney LeBlanc and her sister told Jennifer, the mom, that Bordelon touched him inappropriately. Bordelon abducted LeBlanc in 2002 from his estranged wife's trailer while with a knife from the kitchen and took her to Mississippi, where he forced her to perform oral sex on him and drove back to Louisiana and strangled her. When LeBlanc's body was found 11 days later, she was wearing only a pair of shorts and one tennis shoe. Bordelon led police to her body in a wooded area by the Amy River in Livingston Parish, about 20 miles from Baton Rouge. State Supreme Court opinion upholding Bordelon's right to waive all appeals says Bordelon had a diagnostic profile of sexual sadism, and he told psychiatrists his crimes involved an escalating pattern of violence. And, y'all, he also told them that if he ever got out, he's going to do it again. But Cock, the Courtney's mama, was later convicted of child abuse by a Mississippi jury for failing to keep Bordelon away from her children, and she received a suspended five-year sentence. But y'all, what they don't tell you in here is the judge made her every year on Courtney's birthday, he made Jennifer, the mom, write a letter to Courtney apologizing for not keeping the monster away from him. So he goes to, Angola. Actually, y'all, he was the last person executed in the state of Louisiana to this date. And his final meal was fried sekale. And for you Yankees, that would be crappies or white bass. Crawfish etouffee, a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, and cookies. And write his final words, if you're wondering, just before his execution, Bordelon apologized to LeBlanc's mother, uncle, and sister who witnessed execution, and he asked for their forgiveness. He says, "I'm sorry. I don't know if that brings any closure or peace. It should have never happened, but it did, and I'm sorry," he said, choking up and halting to collect himself. His eyes red rimmed from crying. Bordelon added, "I'd like to apologize to my family and tell them that I love them." Now, y'all, that's because we used his own sister to get the confession out of him. He denied it and everything during an investigation and brought him back to the cemetery in Mississippi and all that. There's a lot more to it. But after he was convicted, the Times-Picayune on New Orleans writes this: "A convicted sex offender who has confessed to strangling his 12-year-old stepdaughter and leaving her partially clothed body in a wooded area of Livingston Parish in 2002 was executed Thursday night. Gerald Bordelon, 47, was pronounced dead at 6:32 p.m. at the Louisiana State Penitentiary after receiving the lethal drug injections. He was sentenced to death for the murder of Courtney LeBlanc, who he kidnapped at a knife point from her home 7 years ago." And again, they tell about what his last words were. But he was wearing a white T-shirt with a gold cross that was given to him by his 19-year-old daughter, with whom he had exchanged necklaces earlier in the day. He'd given her a cross made by fellow inmates. It was Louisiana's first execution since 2002, which Jim just told you about. And Bordelon's lawyer, Joe Kraft, I've known her for years. She takes all the high-profile cases and police cases. She said Bordelon became the first person in Louisiana to successfully refuse a death sentence appeal since the death penalty was reinstated more than three decades ago. When Bordelon asked to waive his appeal, he said he would commit the same crime again if ever given the chance. Anyway, Bordelon says, "I took Courtney and told her if she screamed and hollered or tried to get away, I was going to kill her." And he did this during a videotape confession, y'all. Bordelon met with his family at the Angola prison Thursday in the hours before his execution for his last meal, I already told you about, but he had fried sekale, top of crawfish, etouffee, a peanut butter and apple jelly sandwich, chocolate chip cookies, and three of LeBlanc's relatives watched execution, including LeBlanc's uncle, Damien Cock, his sister Brittany, Brittany Boudreau, and her mother, Jennifer Cock, who was convicted of child abuse for allowing Bordelon near her children after they accused him of molestation. Sniffling could be heard from the separate room where they watched Bordelon die. The family didn't speak to reporters after his death. After Bordelon made his final statement, seven men strapped him to the black padded gurney, removed his shackles. Wearing a T-shirt and blue jeans, he stared at the ceiling as prison officials closed the curtains for the insertion of the IV, and the curtains were reopened. Bordelon spoke to Warden Burl Kane, and he took several deep breaths as the drugs took hold. Kane said the convicted killer again repeated his remorse and asked Kane to tell his daughter that he wasn't afraid. At 6:32 p.m., Kane said, "We now pronounce Gerald Bordelon dead. We've sent his soul for the final judgment." So, y'all, that's, you know, it's a lot to that story. I know a lot of personal knowledge on it, like stuff, it's crazy shit, like letters that Cock wrote to him and everything else. And it's just horrible, horrible case. When I was there and I got called in, Jim, I was telling you about this earlier, he was locked up in the Livingston Parish Jail before he went to trial for Courtney's murder. And he actually escaped with another guy named John Priest. Him and John Priest escaped. We called Gerald Bordelon the next morning, like not even 500 yards away, hiding behind a convenience store, and John Priest a couple of days later. He looked you in the eye and he said, "Hey, Mr. Woody, how you doing this evening?" Just real well spoken, and just, you'd never think this guy was a serial rapist and ultimately pedophile. Murder. Yeah, ultimately murder.
Yeah, an example of someone who never would have stopped.
Right, and that's, I don't know if I hit this. He absolutely waived all his appeals to the death penalty. Now, we know from lifers out there that worked death row that Derek Todd Lee was in the cell next to Bordelon, and they said he would mess, Derek Todd Lee would fuck with him every day from sun up. It was like entertainment. Hey, baby raper, why don't you just kill yourself, and da 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 da, and it was just mess him all day long. But he waived all his rights to appeals, and the state of Louisiana fought him for 5 years to prove that he was sane enough to be killed.
Right? Crazy.
So it is crazy. But that dude, I'm telling you, didn't deserve to breathe.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And we're going to tell you about our next individual, and that is Dobie Gillis Williams. And Dobie Gillis Williams was executed by lethal injection on January 8th of 1999. So we're going to tell you about his crime. On the evening of July 6, 1984, Miss Sonia Nippers fell asleep on her living room sofa while watching TV. She awoke just past midnight, stopped in the bathroom before going to bed. When she closed the bathroom door, she discovered Dobie Williams hiding behind it, pantless, and brandishing a knife. So Sonia began to scream. Williams locked the bathroom door and stabbed Sonia repeatedly with the knife before fleeing out the bathroom window. Although fatally injured, she was unable to unlock the bathroom door after he fled. Her husband carried her into the living room where she bled to death in his arms. Mr. Nippers informed police that his wife had screamed that a black man was trying to kill her. At the time, Williams was staying at the home of his grandfather on a 5-day furlough while serving a prison sentence for a prior burglary conviction. Police suspected Williams because his grandfather's home was nearby. Williams was taken in for questioning and ultimately confessed to the crime after investigators observed fresh scratches and abrasions on his arms and legs. Right. Williams' statement led investigators to the murder weapon found in the grass outside of Nipper's home and to the shirt that he was wearing at the time of the crime, which he had hidden underneath the porch of the grandfather's house. Despite Williams' claims of mistaken identity, recent DNA testing, Woody, concluded that he was the killer.
Indeed he was.
So he denied this stuff before DNA was a thing, right. Said he didn't do it. Denial, and then when they came up with DNA, they said, oh, we got proof that you did it. So they executed him via lethal injection, and the article that was published the day after gives you some insight into how that day was. Dobie Gillis Williams was executed at Louisiana State Penitentiary for the bloody murder of Sonja Nippers. I just want to say I don't have any hard feelings against anybody, he said calmly in a final statement. How nice of him.
Yeah,
not
right.
To have hard feelings.
Yeah.
Wow. God bless y'all. God bless. The time of death was announced at 6:48 p.m. Williams, 38, had avoided 11 execution dates in the past, including two which were canceled earlier this year, which was the year he was executed, for the last-minute appeals. Warden Burl Kane talked quietly with Williams for 2 minutes as the lethal solution was being injected in his arm and neck. Williams could not hear what they said, but Kane later expressed that Williams felt sorry for putting people through so much anguish, although he never admitted, even with DNA evidence, to killing Miss Nippers. At the end of the conversation, Williams lifted his head slightly and smiled. The warden put his hand under Williams' head, eased it back on the gurney. 2 or 3 minutes later, Williams stopped moving. Among the witnesses was a spiritual advisor, Sister Helen Prejean.
Yeah.
She held a cross and prayed as the execution took place. Williams wore a silver cross on a chain around his neck. Other witnesses included Miss Nipper's husband, Herbert, her son, who was 12 at the time of the killing. They left the prison without talking. And that was pretty much the end of Mr. Williams.
Good riddance, right?
Yeah.
Another fine example of not how to be a human being.
He forgives everyone.
Yeah, he forgives everybody else.
You know, putting it through that.
I'm so thankful he forgave me. Yeah.
That's crazy.
And, so let me take you to another one. Veltus Taylor, y'all. Now, if I haven't covered this on Real Life Real Crime, I had notes on this to do, but I'm pretty sure I covered it already. But this is a craziness. So Taylor is a murderer, and the murder was committed during a robbery. The date of the murder was March 27th, 1991. He was arrested the same day. And the victim was Donna Ponsano, and he shot her to death in EBR, y'all, and he was executed on June 6, 2000. But I'll tell you about the crime. On the morning of March 27, 1991, Donna Ponsano was working as a cook at Cajun's Fabulous Fried Chicken Restaurant on Florida Boulevard. Do you remember that?
Yep.
That was like the precursor to Popeye's.
Yeah, it ended up being Popeye's.
It was really good, really good chicken.
Yep.
At approximately 7 a.m., Keith Clark, the restaurant manager, arrived to assist Ponsano and open for business. After attending the morning chores in the rear of the restaurant, Clark returned to the front and noticed Taylor at the front door knocking. Now, y'all, Taylor was a former employee of the restaurant whom Clark had hired approximately 6 months earlier, and he also had fired him about 2 weeks before for poor performance. But he and Clark were still friendly. Clark opened the door for Taylor and allowed him to enter the restaurant. At this time, Taylor, who was experiencing financial problems, asked Clark to rehire him. Clark refused, but assisted him in searching for another job by giving him money to buy a newspaper, it's for internet, y'all, and sit with him in a restaurant booth to review classified job advertisements. Clark found that a local Popeyes restaurant was seeking a cook and called to recommend Taylor for the job. He made a 9 a.m. appointment with the Popeyes manager responsible for hiring and intended to accompany Taylor to discuss his qualifications, right? He's helping the old boy out.
Yeah.
Well, While waiting for the time of the appointment, Clark continued with his morning routine, and Taylor helped by sweeping the dining area of the restaurant. How good of him. As Clark was placing money into the cash register, Taylor decided that robbery was the solution to his financial problems. He exited the restaurant and got a .22 caliber handgun in handcuffs from his car, which was parked in the front. He then re-entered the restaurant and grabbed Ponsano, held the gun to her head, and demanded that Clark open the restaurant's floor safe, which was located in a storeroom towards the rear of the building. Initially, Clark refused, but complied after Taylor again threatened to shoot Ponsano in the head. As the three of them went to the back of the restaurant, Clark tried to escape through a rear entry door. However, his attempts were unsuccessful because the door was locked. Taylor then handcuffed Clark and Ponsano together. Clark opened safe and gave Taylor its contents of approximately a whopping $800. Clark tried to convince Taylor not to continue with the robbery, but he refused, saying that his financial problems were too serious and his car payment of $134 was due. Clark responded by offering to loan or give him a personal check to make the payment. Taylor refused the offer and instructed Clark not to inform the police about the robbery. After Clark told Taylor that he would not lie to the police, he again asked Clark to rehire him. Ponsano expressed her opposition to rehiring Taylor, and Clark agreed. Taylor then shot Ponsano, hitting her five times in the head and upper forearm. After emptying the gun, he exited the room, reloaded, returned, and shot Clark in the head. He then emptied the cash register of approximately $580 and exited through the front door and got in his car and drove away. Earlier, while Taylor was herding Clark and Ponsano to the back of the restaurant, another employee occasions, Bao Kegler, arrived between 8 and 8:30 to begin her workday. She recognized Taylor's car in the front of the building, and when no one responded to her knocking on the door, Kegler looked into the front windows and saw Taylor and Clark going to the storeroom. She waited for a few minutes, went to the rear building, and looked through a two-way peephole in the back door where she saw Taylor exit and return to the storeroom. Shortly thereafter, she heard the gunshots and ran to a neighboring Frost Stop restaurant where she alerted the Frost Stop employees who called 911. And during the 911 telephone call, Taylor exited the restaurant and got into his car. As he drove away, Johns was able to read his license plate number and relate it to the 911 operator. And when the police and emergency medical personnel arrived at the scene, they found Ponsano and Clark lying in the storeroom handcuffed together, each with multiple gunshot wounds to the head. Ponsano died 2 days later after treatment and surgery near a hospital, but Clark survived, but suffers with paralysis and minor brain damage. At approximately 10 p.m. on the day of the shooting, police arrested Taylor near his apartment for attempted first-degree murder and armed robbery, and thereafter he confessed and led police to the stolen money, which was hidden in a field not far from his apartment. Taylor informed police that he had thrown the murder weapons in the Mississippi River. So, y'all, just following this execution, this was put out by the Irish Times. Feltis Taylor, a cook who murdered one former co-worker and left another paralyzed during the 1991 robbery, was executed last night by lethal injection. A last-ditch appeal in the state district court was rejected yesterday afternoon, and the U.S. Supreme Court refused to block the execution on Monday. Five earlier execution dates had been stayed by state and federal courts. Louisiana State Penitentiary Ward Burl Kane reported Taylor was pronounced dead at 8:40 p.m., and he became the 26th man executed in Louisiana since the death penalty was reinstated there in 1983. Taylor, 38 years old, was convicted in 1992 of gunning down Ms. Donna Ponsano, an employee at a fast food restaurant from which he had been sacked. He also paralyzed his former boss, Mr. Keith Clark, with four shots to the head. He stole about $1,300 before shooting Ms. Ponsano. Prison spokeswoman Kathy Jett said Taylor's last words were, "I want to tell you, Keith, and the Ponsano family, that I've always regretted what I've done. It was my own doing. After this is over with, I hope you can find the peace to move on." For his last meal, Taylor ate onion rings, barbecued ribs, and shrimp, corn on the cob, and toast, and cheesecake. So that's that fine.
Oh, yeah.
Outstanding
citizen.
Right? Yeah. I shot him. The guy's paralyzed, the manager, Key, but he shot him 5 times in the head.
Yeah.
He intended to kill him. He intended to leave them both dead.
Disgusting. And we're going to tell you about another one, and that's Robert Wayne Sawyer, and he was executed by lethal injection on March 5th of 1993, and y'all aren't going to believe this crime. So on September 28th of 1979, Robert Sawyer, Francis R. Wood, and Charles Lane were at Cynthia Shano's mother's house in Gratna, Louisiana, and that's just outside of New Orleans, y'all. So Arwood was Shano's sister-in-law and was babysitting with Shano's two small children who were also present. Sawyer lived at the resident with Shano, and when Shano returned home at approximately 12:30 p.m. that day, Sawyer, Lane, and Arwood were arguing.
Right.
As the arguing continued, Sawyer pushed Arwood's head back against the sofa bed and hit her in the face. At this point, Lane also hit Arwood in the face with his fist. Sawyer then started hitting her in the chest, and as Arwood tried to get up off the bed, Sawyer kicked her in the chest and told her, get up and go wash yourself. After Shano had gone into the bedroom with the children, she heard Lane hitting Arwood. When she came out, Shano observed Sawyer grab Arwood by the hair into the bathroom. When Arwood would not get into the bathtub, Sawyer kicked her in the chest, knocked her into the tub, and hit her head against the wall. Lane then pulled Arwood out of the bathtub and undressed her. The bathroom door was closed for about 20 minutes. While Lane was in the bathroom alone with Arwood, Sawyer boiled hot water.
Really?
He went into the bathroom and poured detergent over the victim's head and poured hot water on her. Lane started ducking the victim's head under the water and punching her with his fist. Sawyer and Lane then pulled Arwood out of the bathtub. And when the victim resisted by hitting Sawyer, he screamed, kicked her in the chest, and Arwood's head either hit the windowsill or the bathtub and rendered her unconscious.
Crazy.
Sawyer and Lane then carried the victim into the living room, dropped her face down on the floor. Lane started kicking Arwood in the rib area, and while Sawyer walked on her back. After Sawyer beat the victim with a leather belt, the two men put Arwood on the sofa bed. Shano, who had been screaming for them to stop, covered the victim's body with a blanket. While Shano was in the bathroom, after becoming nauseated, obviously from all of this, she heard Sawyer state to the defendant, I'll show you how cruel I can be. When Shano returned from the bathroom, she observed smoke coming from the victim's face and from the victim's legs, which were open. Lane was laughing and informed her that his penis was burned because he was having sexual intercourse with the victim while Sawyer set
the devil
them on fire. After some of Shano's friends arrived at the house, the victim was transported to the hospital. Arwood, who arrived at the hospital in a coma, had third-degree burns all over her body, lacerations on her chin, swelling in the face and neck, and she died on November 21st of 1979. The cause of death, significant brain damage from blunt head injury and extensive burns over the majority of her body. Sawyer and Lane continued to lounge about the residence. They listened to records, discussed the disposition of Miss Arwood's body, and Lane fell asleep next to the beaten and swollen body of the victim. Shortly after noon, Shano's sister and nephew came for a visit. When the nephew knocked insistently, Sawyer gave Shano the key to open the door, and she ran in screaming to the safety of her relatives. Her excited, her demeanor was just incomprehensible to her nephew and sister until they looked inside, saw the gruesome scene in Arwood's beaten and blistered body. They also saw Sawyer sitting on the bed with his feet propped up on the edge of the couch. In the meantime, Shano called for police and emergency units, and when the authorities arrived, they arrested Lane Sawyer and rushed Arwood to the hospital. So one of the most horrible crimes I've read about. Obviously, they were sentenced and convicted. Now, the interesting thing was Lame was tried first, and he was sentenced to life in prison. Sawyer was convicted by a unanimous jury, which then proceeded to give him death. And on March 5th of 1993, he was executed by lethal injection at Louisiana State Penitentiary in Angola. His final statements, curious.
Wait to hear this one. Yeah.
What'd he say? His final statements was as follows. I would like to tell all young kids who might read this that drinking and hanging with the wrong people will get you where I am right now. I hope that nobody else has to go through what I have gone through. It's always about them, isn't it, Woody Overton?
And not about the kill.
No. You notice that, y'all? It's always about them. Yeah. I hope nobody else has to go through what I have gone through. Right. Boy, you got some balls. Right. Especially young kids. I'm sorry for any hurt and pain that they say I've caused. Yeah. I have no hard feelings towards anyone. Becoming a habit, isn't it?
Truly a psychopath. Yeah.
I just want my sister, my brother-in-law, my son, all my families and friends to know I love them, and I'll be waiting on them in heaven.
Yeah, I bet.
How about that?
Hopefully he didn't make it to heaven, but that is one of the sickest crimes I've ever heard.
Yeah, it's horrible. I'd love to see you cover that one on Real Life.
Right, and maybe I'll try to get it in that case file. I mean, geez, Louise, I didn't know. I don't know why I don't know about him. Or I know now, right, on Bloody Angola.
Yeah.
And all these people, y'all, lived on death row, exhausted their appeals. They truly were part of the fabric of Bloody Angola, right?
Yes.
As is this next guy, Dalton Prejean. He killed two people it was in Lafayette, and he was electrocuted on May 18th, 1990. Now, let me tell you this story, okay? So, at about 5 o'clock in the morning on July 2nd, 1977, Prejean, his brother, Joseph, and Michael George and Michael Broussard left Rogers Nightclub in Lafayette Parish. The four had spent the night drinking in various lounges in the vicinity. Not unusual. I used to live there. We used to bar hop every night, right?
Sure.
They left Rogers Nightclub in a 1966 Chevrolet driven by Dalton, with his brother in the front seat and the other two in the back. The car's taillights were not working, and within a few hundred feet of the lounge, Trooper Cleveland, who was on his way to work driving his police vehicle, signaled the Chevrolet to stop. Prejean and his brother attempted to switch places, in the front seat because the defendant had been driving without a license. The trooper noticed the switch and ordered the occupants out of the car. He told Michael George and Michael Broussard to get back in, however, and began to search Joseph Prejean. Dalton Prejean, back in the car, stated in reaction to the troopers pushing Joseph against the car over Joseph's protests, he said, "I don't like the way he's doing my brother." Mm-hmm. Dalton then took a .38 caliber revolver from under the car seat and got out the car and approached the officer with the gun hidden against his leg. As he neared the trooper, he fired without warning. Trooper Cleveland was struck by two bullets and was killed. Dalton and his companions fled the scene, but were apprehended several hours later. Dalton was once again given psychological tests during pretrial confinement, and on the basis of the Wechsler Intelligence Scale, the Stanford-Binet Vocabulary Subtest, and the Bender-Gestalt Test, Dr. Williams Hawkins determined that he functioned at the dull, normal level in the verbal area, but in the borderline mental retardation area and the performance area. He had a verbal IQ of 82 and a performance IQ of 72, and his full scale IQ is 76 with a full scale mental age of 13 years, 6 months. On May 18th, 1990, Prejean was executed by the electric chair at Louisiana State Penitentiary in Angola. In his final statement, he provided, "Nothing is going to be accomplished. I have peace with myself." Right? That's about him. "I'd like to thank all of those who supported me all these years. I also like to thank my loved ones for being strong. My son will be a better person for not letting something like this ruin his life. Keep strong, keep pushing, keep praying. They said it wasn't for the revenge, but it's hard for me to understand. I hope they're happy. So I forfeit my life. I give my love to all, and God bless.
That's amazing. It seems like every one of these guys, they're the victim.
Well, you better believe if I had done it, I'd be on that table begging for forgiveness from that family and begging Jesus to the second I fell asleep from the dope or whatever. And these days are all about, my people, be straight and whatever.
Just insane. Now, we're going to tell you about Edward Byrne and this is a gruesome Gertie rider.
Gruesome Gertie.
Rode that gruesome Gertie.
Oh, shout out to Thomas Kane.
Thomas Kane. Who's going to be playing at the Bayou Country Superfest right here in Livingston Parish. I believe it'll be this weekend. Either this weekend or next weekend. But Thomas Kane will be playing at that. Chase Tyler, they got a lot of bands going to be there.
Chase Tyler.
Be a whole weekend.
For crime. Yep.
Yeah, so... back to our stories. Edward Byrne rode Gruesome Gertie on June 14th, 1988. And, you know, it's interesting, y'all, when we're researching this stuff, some of them you have just a ton of information on. Right. Some of them you don't. It's just the way it is behind the wire. You know, it's hard to get information on what goes on. But we're going to tell you a little bit about the ones crime.
You know, these crimes were committed in the 70s now. We're talking about shit like that.
Yeah, so exactly.
It's not like they had anything other than newspaper articles to go by. It's not like the internet.
That's right. And Edward Byrne was executed on June 14th of 1988. He was convicted of the murder of Roberta Johnson, who was a Bossier City service station cashier.
Right.
During a August 14th, 1984 robbery, Byrne had previously dated Johnson. He beat her on the head and upper body with a ball peen hammer.
What?
Then
that didn't take long.
Robbed her of $7,000. Byrne made no final public statement. He told the pardon board the day before his execution, "I don't know exactly what it is that I can say to y'all. I was planning to rob this woman all along. It was a setup. There were no flaws that I could see. I just attempted to knock her unconscious and it didn't work."
Yeah.
She didn't become unconscious. I just kept hitting her until she did.
Oh, my God.
So it's her fault, Woody.
Right.
It's her fault. She wouldn't go unconscious fast enough. With a ball peen freaking hammer, y'all. Now, the article that was written just after his execution, a man who robbed and fatally bludgeoned his girlfriend died early today in Louisiana's electric chair. It was the 100th execution in the United States since the 1976 Supreme Court ruling that reinstituted capital punishment. The 28-year-old killer was executed at Louisiana State Penitentiary for the August 1984 hammer slaying of Roberta Johnson, who was 25, and he admitted to the crime. So Mr. Byrne clad blue jeans and a T-shirt, and he claimed that, as we just told you, he never intended to kill the victim. Yeah, he just wanted to knock her unconscious. He said he was planning to rob her, and that was it. So since his arrest, Mr. Byrne did admit that he started dating Miss Johnson because he knew she handled large sums of money at the service station where she worked, but he insisted that, again, he never meant to kill her. So he had the pleasure of riding Gruesome Gertie. And again, another guy who denies, you know, that he has any responsibility in this. It was her fault.
Her fault because she had a lot of money.
And
I just want to knock her out.
Yeah.
And y'all, I'm going to do one more. And this is just crazy. And when we'll continue these stories again, another point, because these are all just mind blowing, right? I'm going to tell you about Thomas Lee Ward. Thomas Lee Ward was an American murderer. He was tried, convicted, and executed by a lethal injection in Louisiana for the murder of his stepfather-in-law, John Spencer. So on the night of June 22nd, 1983, Ward claims he arrived in New Orleans from California by bus. He went to the residence of Lydia and John Spencer, the mother and stepfather of his wife. Ward's wife and children were also staying at the house. Ward was allowed in the house to visit his children. He asked and was allowed to bathe and freshen up. Ward learned that his wife had begun receiving welfare and the family was having some trouble with one of the daughters. Ward later claimed that this upset him, but rather than saying or doing anything rash, he just left the house. He then went to a local bar where he drank vodka and beer and hit up with cocaine, right? Ward returned to the house at approximately 5:30 a.m. Now, that's a long time at the bar.
Yeah.
And asking to see his children one last time. After visiting with the children, he gave his wife his address and phone number in New York, then went into the bedroom of his wife's mother and stepfather. He pulled out a gun, pointed at John Spencer, and said, "I'm sorry, John. I have to kill you." He then shot.
At least he apologized first.
Right. He then shot Spencer once at close range. As Lydia Spencer reached for her husband, Ward shot her in the stomach. When she turned around, he shot her in the back. Lydia Spencer ran for the door, trying to get out of the house. Ward followed her, striking her with three more shots. Linda Ward and her brother, Ernest Scott, heard the shooting and ran from the house to get help from neighbors. When the police arrived, Ward walked up to the police officers on the guise of turning himself in. The police did not seize Ward at first, and not yet knowing that he was the alleged murderer, Ward claims the police shooed him away because he was drunk. After further investigation at the scene, the police realized who Ward was and arrested him. So go to the trial. Ward was indicted by the Orleans Parish Grand Jury with first-degree murder. And on August 15, 1984, the jury at Ward's trial found him guilty as charged. After a sentencing hearing in which Ward testified, the jury unanimously recommended a sentence of death. So Ward was executed by lethal injection at Bloody Angola on March 16, 1995. He declined to make a final statement, but dictated to his attorney that, "I am leaving the world at peace with myself and with the Almighty. I feel remorse for the things that I did. I hope that young people today will learn from the violence that violence is not an answer. I hope the legal system learns that lesson too. The death penalty is not a solution."
Of course not.
Right?
Of course not, especially when you're getting it.
I mean, yeah, yeah.
But he can administer the death penalty.
Right. And just wake the dude up in his bed and say, "Sorry, I have to kill you tonight." And I mean, whatever.
Just insane. But
evil exists. And like sure we told y'all last week, certainly we don't want anyone executed.
No.
Incorrectly, if you right. would be. But it certainly, these stories don't move you. I don't know what will.
Yeah, and we definitely want to mention HelloFresh real quick. Absolutely. And the fact that, God. What a deal. 16 free meals plus free shipping.
With the code
BloodyAngola16. So you go to HelloFresh.com/BloodyAngola16. Yeah. And you can take advantage of that.
Y'all, I got to talk about this real quick. HelloFresh is not paying for us to talk about this right now, but I'm going to tell you how much I believe in it. I hate to go to the grocery store. I had to do it on Mother's Day, right? Because I was cooking. Other than that, I'm ordering HelloFresh because everything is like restaurant chef meals. And yeah. It comes with the easy read card.
All the ingredients.
In like 30 minutes, all the ingredients. Like, I had pork steaks the other night with this pasta and sauces and all this stuff that's put together by professionals, and shit is cheap. Yeah. And when you put the ones I order for four people, right? The meals. Mm-hmm. When you put that price against what it takes you, the time going to the grocery store, getting something wrong, with the price of everything in the grocery store nowadays, or ordering out.
Yeah.
Shit, it's the same thing. Now, if you don't believe me, use our code, get 16 free meals. Plus free shipping. Y'all, I love when those boxes show up at my door.
Oh, yeah.
Eating like a king that night.
So. Yeah, definitely. But, so check that out. We want to thank all our team members from our patron.
Right.
Could not, you know, we say it every episode, but we couldn't. Can't we do couldn't do any you. Of this without all
and
of you.
Y'all didn't listen to our HelloFresh commercial because you get the commercial-free early releases. But we want to thank you anyway. And that's y'all right. should need to check out HelloFresh because the deal is 16 free meals.
God.
That's
and they're legit meals, man. They're legit. So check that out. If you have any, one thing I did want to mention, if you have any cases that you want us to check out and you know, that are Bloody Angola related, right. send them to
or
us.
Or if you work there, we still got to do a tour. We got to do our tour.
That's right.
And if you're listening and you're over the tours, reach out to us because I always forget.
Yes.
There's shit going on.
And we want to say to our favorite Angola warden, Burrow Kane. We want to have you on the show. We'd love to have you on and discuss your time and all the great things you did at Louisiana State Penitentiary. So reach out to us, please, sir.
He's got the stories forever.
That's
and we love and appreciate each and every one of y'all. Bloody Angola has risen to the top of the charts because of y'all. And please keep telling everybody else about us and liking and sharing and all that good stuff. I'm going to love and appreciate you.
That's right. Until next time, I'm Jim Chapman.
And I'm Woody Overton.
Your host of Bloody
Angola.
A podcast, 142 years in the making.
The complete story of America's bloodiest prison.
Peace.
I walk a straight line, shackle and chain. Oh, gruesome Gertie is calling my name. There is no mercy in this penitentiary. Just ask the Hill String Gang, Rango the Three.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.